Hello and welcome to Think Rant. Today is the 24th of November 2011, and I'm your host, John Stabler. With me, as usual, are my two co-hosts, Stephen Brett.
Good evening.
And Trevor J. Williams.
Hello.
And just the usual announcements, you can... Yeah, sorry, there's no funniness this week, yeah, again. Yeah, this is a regular thing. You throw me
we're
there.
We're so lazy. We're so lazy. And we totally skipped last week, didn't tell you.
It's no.
This is how Nazi Germany started, just like I said.
He's predicted
just
it.
Just like the bins. Yeah, every fortnight.
Every fortnight, just like the bins. It's all you need.
No.
Well, we may be lazy shirkers, but let's concentrate on this one, guys.
Yeah.
So the Think Rant podcast can serve its vital role as clearly it provides a very useful...
Yeah,
Steve,
well, no, it
Steve,
does. Yeah, it provides a useful time filler.
And we'll do more
time
of
filler
that.
For traveling on the train.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to edit out all of that silence that you guys just did. And also, but maybe I like to think of us. You know, I've listening back to all the previous episodes while I edited them. I'm thinking, what do we actually provide the public? And lately, the only thing I can think of is we bash the Tories, and that is it. And assassinate characters such as Theresa May. Theresa May. Yeah. So, we need to up the game. So, Steve. No, hang on, I've got the announcements first. And then we'll go to Steve with his stories.
What stories? I haven't got any stories.
Yeah, you can check
have
out
you
our blog.
Have you not listened to this podcast before?
No, a couple of weeks ago we had loads of stories.
That's because I'd been off sick and all I had to do all day was look at the internet.
Oh, God. Most normal
you
people.
At stories? You
yeah,
the
most
internet,
people
man.
Would look at porn, to be fair.
Well, you know, I was a bit sore. I was off for a long time. What can I say?
Yeah. Okay. So you can check out past episodes on thinkrant.blogspot.com or you can check us out on iTunes and leave us a review. If you want to send us some hate mail, you can tweet us at ThinkRant.
Send that to John, because he loves it.
Well, you know, yeah, I do love hate mail. I get all the nutters, but maybe more about that another time. You can also email us, info@thinkrant.co.uk. And we also have a Facebook page. But the great thing about this is as soon as we're done here, I usually upload it straight
sorry,
to iTunes.
Because, yeah, you can't edit it, though, because in 2008... a crack commando unit imprisoned John Stabler for a podcast he did not edit. He promptly escaped from a maximum security mental hospital and now operates in the South Wales underground, surviving as an IT guy of fortune. If you have a podcast, if no one else can edit it, and if you can persuade him, maybe you can hire John Stabler.
Or alternatively, just buy him a bow and he's fine.
Yeah.
I've been cutting down
but no,
on
he's just...
or a glass of red wine.
Red yeah. wine's the way forward with me. I'm easy to bribe, but that's one ref. That's one reference that I actually got this week because I did love the A-Team, and I'm glad to be out of the mental hospital. I always thought Howling Mad Murdoch was the best.
Well, Howling Mad Murdoch was never mad, though, was he? Let's be honest.
He was more sane than most people.
He's a genius.
Think about it. Yeah. Okay. Joking aside, Trev, you get to go first this week. And Steve's Crikey. Looking at me saying, "Hang on, I got all prepared." Okay, Steve, if that is genuine, then we will go to you first, then.
What was that?
A cussing that was going down beforehand. Oh, dear.
Well,
and then there must
know.
Have been some desperate scrabbling, and now you've come up with the goods.
Well, exactly.
From Trevor.
But you see, that's what it takes, Trevor. You know, I don't come with stories, but that's the wonder of having the internet at your fingertips. It's like you just pluck one out of the air. Pow. And I was going to say, because I'm guessing you guys have already got it on your list anyway, but the whole Leveson inquiry.
It's not on my list, actually. I was actually going to wait for maybe another week to see what happened, but obviously you've got something to say about it.
Well, yeah, I just think it's really interesting, just kind of following it as much as I can throughout the day and just seeing what people are saying. I mean, you know, you've got the McCanns yesterday who, you know, spent a couple of years being vilified through the media following the, you know, real tragic loss of their daughter, which, okay, may ultimately have been down to their neglect, but I mean, you know, some of the stories which came out about them and turned them into Public Enemy's number one was solely driven by the media, a lot of which the media had to recant and apologise on. Excuse me, and I think this has been one of my biggest bugbears for such a long time about the media. So this is, I guess, kind of a media rant in general, not necessarily specifically related to the Leveson inquiry, is that I want to go, and call me old-fashioned by all means, but I want to go back to the days where the newspapers, the media, reported the news, not actually wrote the news, if you see what I mean.
And this is a big bugbear of mine, actually, because I've been seeing this a lot lately, especially when trawling for stories from America for things like Spot the Fake and other stories to make me upset. And it's quite often very little facts, and it's all about how you should be feeling about this and how the people that were there feel about it.
Yeah.
And it really pisses me off.
It just winds me up. You know, whilst personally I'm kind of ambivalent towards the McCanns, I do feel desperately sorry for them, because not only have they lost their child, but they've also had some absolute disgusting downright lies spread about them in the media. I mean, the media, you know, things like they kidnapped their own child to pay off debt, sold them into slavery. Mm. You know, how disgusting is that when they're trying to come to terms with the loss of their child in the first place and then have to put up with that? Or J.K. Rowling was giving testimony to the courts today, and you know, they made up stories like her husband, who's a doctor, had to give up work because of her demands as a multi-millionaire, you know, multi-million pound author. You know, he had to give up work because, you know, she was just so demanding. And it's all nonsense like that. And, you know, these papers, these news outlets, these internet channels, whatever the media is which is being used to propagate these stories, are creating myths and planting seeds into the public's minds. And I think it's no wonder we see such absolute idiocy spouted on things such as Speak Your Brains and Have Your Say on the BBC, because the media has spent the last however many years pumping this nonsense into people's heads.
I can remember, actually, that there used to be a distinction between comment and reportage, but these days, since like 24-hour rolling news especially, and it's even happened on the BBC, ITN fell for it long ago. I think Channel 4 News is probably the closest we've got in this country now for impartiality. But if you try and tell some teenager, somebody really young, about the difference between comment and reportage, they would say, what the hell is reportage? I've got no idea.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little to point to. There's no story about something that happened that some people find disgusting, that it'll be reported as this disgusting thing that happened.
Mm. And the other one as well is obviously partisan politics in newspapers, which I believe Ben Goldacre brought up on Twitter this evening, was that, you know, why do we accept newspapers that are so blatantly partisan, really? You know, why is there a right-wing media? Why is there, you know, a left-wing media? If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
If your paper, if the idea of a newspaper is to give news, then what purpose does having such a large amount of opinion pieces actually serve? Apart from reinforcing people's, you know, prejudices, or, you know, reinforcing their existing views. What is the purpose of it?
We're a bunch of dreadful lefties, though, aren't we? What papers do we buy when we ever buy papers?
Well, no, exactly. And I'm saying, you know, I'm not saying that it's just the right, you know, I'm not just saying it's
every now and
the
then
Sun,
you might get the Guardian or the Independent, but probably just the Art.
You know, I'll read the Independent or the Guardian, and I can see political bias when I understand it. I mean, they do say we are supporting this political party. During the last election, The Guardian said we're going to support the Lib Dems. And the other papers obviously say they're going to support the Tories or whatever. And I don't necessarily have a problem with that. But what I have a problem with is the fact that news, the stories that are reported and the angle they're reported at is purely ideological, politically ideological, which I think is a bad thing.
I think I'm looking now, and I'm going to pick on them because, you know, I always do anyway. I'm looking at the homepage and the front page on at this moment of the Mail Online. And this, I think, is... I think, you know, if I was looking... I could be looking at any of the tabloid papers then and have the same comment as what I'm going to make now, which is, I'm looking at this, you've got a couple of headlines which are kind of newsworthy, to be honest with you. But, you know, top centre of the page, Katie Price tweeting Peter a cryptic good luck message. Who cares? Then, down the whole of the right-hand side of the page, when you go from top to bottom, it's all gossip column stuff. It's all about Michelle Dubry. Do you remember her from The Apprentice 2 or 3 seasons ago?
Who?
Wearing a dress. Yeah? It's about Martine McCutcheon. Do you remember her? Losing weight. Oh. You know, and it's all these sort of stories. Just scroll down the whole of the...
And for a bit of balance, I will look at The Guardian online, just to give you a bit of balance here. J.K. Rowling...
Actually, can I tell you guys about... I got the Eye today, and there's a whole bunch of great stories in there that we'll probably come to. But one of them, I was really impressed with them, because it just says a quote from Vince Cable. And it says that what Cable is basically saying, Cable, no proof labour rights curb will aid economy. Saying that he's backing the current proposals to shaft workers and make them playthings of employers. But he doesn't see if it's going to do any good. Now, if I had been writing that, I would have made the headline, Cable, I let Cameron gag fuck me in the face, and I like it. Because he's a turncoat bastard. And I mean, supporting a measure like that is just rank hypocrisy from the Liberals.
Well,
especially when he admits that he doesn't see that it's going to work, but he's following the party line of another bloody party.
Yeah, that's selling your principles pretty cheaply if at the end of the day you think that something's not going to work and yet you're still going to back it simply to keep a party together. Now,
yeah, but I wouldn't have the journalistic integrity to be able to write the calm piece that is in the Eye. And that's a tabloid.
This is true. That kind of brings me onto a story that I wasn't going to do immediately, but seems we're talking about Lib Dems and turncoats. I'm going to have to do it now, I'm afraid. People may have seen me tweet about this. This is Mr. Hune. Chris Hune, Secretary of State for Energy and Climate Change. It was on Newsnight last night. Did you catch this, Trev?
No, I didn't see it.
No, it was on before the CEO of British Gas and some other energy companies. But listen to this, and this is paraphrasing him, but this is pretty close. Green tax rises on energy will reduce people's bills. Yeah. So
there's not really much you can say to it, is there? Really, let's be honest.
So there's this touted green tax that's going to be put on people's energy bills. You know, they're thinking about 7% at the moment, but that's, you know, still undecided. But the idea is, what they're going to do is they're going to tax people on their energy bills, okay, to raise revenue. And apparently, according to Chris Hune, this means that people's bills are going to be cheaper. Okay? Right, now, no. I mean, the maths don't add up. Now, I'm thinking, and I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, because I'm doing the thinking, I don't think he has, that maybe his idea is that if you make it more expensive, people will use less or something like that.
What, the myth behind petrol?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. We've been seeing petrol for years.
Because how long have we had the green tax on petrol for in this country?
Yeah. You sound like Jeremy Clarkson now, though.
Well, no, but it's a fair point, isn't it? Because with... And yes, I do work for an energy company. You know, I'll hold my hand up.
Not for long,
but,
though.
But... With energy prices, but in particular, at the moment, energy companies in general are taking a massive shoeing from the media. Okay, some things they do get wrong, but the fact of the matter is the cost of wholesale gas has gone up, as it's gone up at the petrol pump as well. But the media, again, we come back to that subject, who, when the cost of petrol goes up or the cost of diesel goes up, immediately start assaulting the government for the amount of tax that they have to pay per litre, not the actual companies who are making, you know, billions of dollars a second. The ire goes straight to the government and the tax. When it comes to energy, where there's still a huge and disproportionate amount of tax going towards the treasury, suddenly it's the profiteering energy companies, which are the devil and which are, you know, causing all the problems. You know, I think the company that I work for makes something like £12 a year off a gas customer. The rest of the money is, yes, some of it goes to shareholders, but the rest of it is reinvested into the business, and a large chunk of that goes to tax. Because unlike some other companies which dodge corporate tax, our company doesn't. So, you know, I guess from my point of view, talking about the going back to the media and the balance and approach and reporting, I guess the question I'd like to ask is why do we have this situation where petrol goes up, it's the fault of the treasury, energy goes up, it's the fault of the profiteering companies?
Yeah.
Yep, is what the papers say has just been generally accepted by everybody.
But maybe this is a case of timing. Sorry, just to get this in quickly. This is a case of timing that, you know, with the current idea of bankers are to blame for our problem, you know, the government's probably quite happy to see the press jumping on energy companies instead of them.
I'm sure they are.
Not to suggest a conspiracy between the government and the press.
But the fact of the matter is that the oil prices and price at the pump continues to increase.
Hmm.
And it's always... I mean, the talk has been again about, you know, Osborne's latest budget. Is he going to stop the rise in fuel duty this time? Is he going to, you know, halt the planned rise in fuel duty again? Because, you know, the motorists can't afford the heavy tax burden that is on
because it affects industry,
duty.
Obviously.
You know, and I'm not for 1 minute saying that I think the tax on fuel is fair. I think, yeah, it probably could do with reducing it a little bit. But it's this media approach again that, you know, completely is it's the same sort of industry, but if for one part of the industry it's fine for the companies to be making, as I say, billions of dollars a second, where you've got a company then which makes, yes, a very healthy profit over the course of a year, is suddenly profiteering off the back of its customers.
Hmm.
And, you know, I think there's a distinction there with clear mark where I think, you know, the media again are portraying the news as they want it to be portrayed.
Hang on, Trev, you was...
Yeah, there's a thing about energy in general that links to another story that I've got, which I think is quite important. That there's a thing about efficiency. Obviously, we all want our energy to be as efficient as possible, but we've been burning fossil fuels for centuries, and we're not going to get much better at it. You know, that's what we're currently doing. But there are other things where you have to put in loads of money in research, and then you will get greater efficiency. There was something on the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe about a month back or so where they were saying about lithium-ion batteries have had a major leap in research, so that they'll perform so much better, hopefully, as long as it pans out. And that's a wonderful thing, because there's investment going on. But if you don't invest in like alternative energies and other things, then they will remain, you know, cost ineffective. They'll end up a place where you just sink loads of money. But one person who clearly doesn't get that it's something that you've got to invest loads of money in for it to actually pay off is Felony Millips. She's banging on about it because Prince Philip, brilliant scientist. He had a bit of a whinge about wind turbines, and she's hailed him as a hero. And you wouldn't believe the comments that she managed to bring out. Not only are these turbines hugely expensive to build and operate, but also, surprise, surprise, when the wind blows too hard, they have to be shut down. Oh, and yeah, surprise, when the wind isn't blowing, you don't get any energy from them. So wind power has to be supplemented by gas-fired power stations, which push into the atmosphere yet more of the dreaded carbon dioxide that the turbines are meant to help diminish. But that's actually what she's defending, is just using gas-fired power stations. So I don't really know what point she's saying there. But she's just making twatty comments. It's expensive now for all this stuff, The idea is it'll get cheaper and more efficient.
Yeah.
You know, there are strides being made all the time, but the way to get there is to invest in study. Like, you almost hear her words almost fall to a whisper on the page. These things, when they provide zero energy, if the wind isn't blowing. Like, she's embarrassed to say it.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like saying, you know, coal provides zero energy when the train doesn't get to the power station with the coal on there. But, you know,
if the fire goes out.
Yeah.
Then where's all the power gone then?
Mm. And, yeah, this is like pretty idiotic things that people just want to make a kind of statement or a political statement, and they completely, you know, even though it contradicts everything they say, they just gloss over it, you know, completely.
Yeah. Because, you know, the thing is, I think the most responsible thing we can do at the moment is have an integrated approach to our energy needs. I mean, for sure, we're going to need a national grid, and there's going to need to be fuel powered into that national grid from standard power stations. But what is to stop and what is wrong with supplementing that power using natural resource?
What do they actually want us to do? They literally want us to wait until all of the coal and gas runs out and then go, right, now we need to do something about it. Is that what they're honestly saying?
It looks that way, doesn't it?
You know, or are they that actually crazy? You know, it's not just the companies or the media. The governments are highly culpable in this, that they're in the pockets, you know, of big business because they're the people who are lobbying them all the while. And so they're the people there at the top, the people who can make a difference and who can push for laws, are in the pay of the people who have the most money to make, not the future of the planet.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think one of the key places where that can be seen quite clearly is in Australia, where you've got this massive mining industry, which literally almost dictates policy to the Australian government. You know, back last year, they were talking about putting a super tax on the mines. As soon as the mining lobby started going off on one, that super tax suddenly got dropped. The carbon trading scheme, which they were looking to bring in to help reduce emissions, got dropped. And it was all because of pressure from the mining lobby.
Which is quite sad, because I believe one of the last Australian elections was decided quite significantly on environmental policy, because they'd experienced a terrible drought and the public said we need to do something. Obviously,
it was, you know. Yeah, the carbon trading was one of the flagship policies of the government of Australia, who are in power now. But no, the mining lobby got hold of it and basically strangled it, and they had to accept a very much watered down version of it. Exactly what that entailed, I'm not 100% sure, but you know, it was literally a case of, actually, guys, you know, we're the ones holding all the cards here because we're digging your country up and not giving you any money for it, but we're going to tell you that you're not going to tax us because we won't stand for it. And you know, that's essentially how it went. So, you know, it's just very interesting, isn't it? I mean, going back to your comment about what Chris Hune said, though, last night, I mean, it's just idiocy, isn't it? I mean, how can you possibly...
Well, as I said, he would probably try and justify it saying that if you put increased tax, people will spend less. Which, as you just said, well, petrol, you know, we got evidence there to say that you can put the tax up on petrol. It doesn't work. People just end up having to pay it.
Yeah.
And then he made some, you know, excuse about insulation and, you know, stuff like that. But again, that's not going to, you know...
I'm fairly sure he was thinking about just himself and a bunch of fairly well-off people that he knows. If this kind of extra tax gets put on the top of bills, then they'll say, you know what, I'm going to replace my boiler for a far more efficient one, and I'll lag the roof and everything. And that way, your bills will drop after you've spent, you know, £5,000 to £10,000 or however much sorting your house and your boiler out. But people living hand-to-mouth can't do that.
I think there are grants for loft insulation and stuff like that, but, you know...
That's true, but
with the current government cuts, you know, what is the true nature of getting a new boiler and stuff?
I think, certainly my company, I do think that other companies are doing it as well, they were, and it is only for OAPs, but they are installing cavity wall installation and loft installation for free. So, I mean, there are things out there, you know, if you, anybody's listening and you have grandparents or whatever in the UK who haven't got insulation, go and speak to your energy company, because some companies out there are providing this service for free.
And sure. But just let me get
low
this
paid workers are the ones who are going to suffer the worst.
Oh, you're absolutely
because
right,
they're usually not eligible for a damn thing and can't afford to
and
heat
to use down. And to use David Cameron's own words against him, the squeezed middle, okay,
yeah,
are not going to be entitled to any of these lovely new brand new free boilers. They still end up paying. So
paying $4,000 or $5,000.
He is basically, these kind of policies are targeting the people that voted him in.
Yeah. Absolutely. And just the other great myth as well, you know, talking about Cameron and energy costs and you know, generally the people being squeezed, is that it's fine when we, because I'm kind of coming into another bugbear of mine at the moment, which is constant talk of this constant war of, you know, fighting benefit cheats and fighting benefit fraud, and you know, we've got to cut benefits and get rid of this culture of people living off benefits in the country. What I think people seem to be missing out on is a very interesting fact I heard the other day on the radio, is that rich people keep their pound in their pocket. The poor person is the person who goes out and spends it. If we keep cutting benefits, if we keep cutting money to the poorest and most vulnerable and disadvantaged in our society, we're taking away the whole foundation on which we can get growth from, which is people going out spending money, because they're not having any money to spend. At the moment, they're spending money, they're spending the pound which comes into their pocket, and they're going out, they spend it all. Whereas a rich person doesn't spend that money, they don't have that need. So it's all very well to talk about cutting benefits and cutting benefits and cutting benefits.
But compared to how much tax dodging is going on,
precisely,
it's a drop in the ocean.
It is a drop in the ocean. But again, I blame the media again. We've got this crusade against people on benefits. Sure, there are some unscrupulous people out there who are frankly stealing off the state, and there is absolutely no doubt about that through benefit fraud. But that benefit fraud is an absolute fraction
of the tax
fraud. Which is going on, which George Osborne.
Yeah.
Is dodging week after week, month after month, and letting these people get away with it. And then they're coming back again and again and again. Well, we've got to cut benefits because, you know, by cutting benefits, we're going to cut down on the fraud. What you're actually doing is you're stopping people going out and spending money, which is going to get this economy kick-started and get going again.
And the funny thing is that he's quite happy to give sound bites along the lines of, oh, well, we'd love to give this Robin Hood tax where, you know, we can get money off the banks. And then in small print after. However, we'll only do it if every other country on the planet does it. So that's just permanently on hold, basically.
Well,
because America's never going to do it.
But, you know, Europe actually appeared to be taking a lead on this, you know. German Chancellor is talking very much about having a Robin Hood tax. And even if it is only the Euro bloc which does it, well, you know, I think there's solidarity enough there for them to do something about it.
Okay. Do you want to do your Catholic story first? Or do you want me to do the feature?
Hey, let's do the feature.
Bring
you
know, it on.
Everything's working at the moment. So, yeah, you never know.
Okay, here we go. This is a regular feature, Spot the Fake.
Da, da, da.
Where I get Trev and Steve to listen to me talk about three very dodgy stories and have to decide which one I made up and which of the other two are just crazy real life. So, here we go. Story number one. A moral panic has erupted in the US with news that teenagers in American high schools and colleges have been using tampons to get drunk during the school day. Soaking the jam rags in vodka and other spirits before inserting them allows for rapid uptake of alcohol, which can give a very quick and potent buzz as it enters the bloodstream directly, bypassing the usual ingestion process. Although the products are usually reserved for feminine hygiene, male students have also been using them anally, allowing both sexes to have a good time while riding the cotton donkey.
Good one. I like that. Good turn of
phrase. Story number two. 30-year-old sales assistant Phil Newton could hardly believe his eyes when he saw a dog driving a double-decker bus through the streets of the far northern Australian city of Darwin. Newton said the dog was sitting in the driver's seat with its paws on the steering wheel. He chased after the runaway bus, leapt through an open window and rammed on the handbrake. It ran for a couple of hundred metres, swerved across the road, went up the footpath and was just about to run into a parked car when I stopped it, he said. Woodley, a two-year-old German coolie dog, appeared to be unrepentant about his aborted joyride. His owner, Richard McCormack, 62, said, "He sits next to me when I'm driving, and in the driver's seat when I'm not. The handbrake is on the dashboard, and he's seen me release it a few times. He was just copying me. He's tried it on before." And story number three. The second weekend in December is set to be busier than usual in Berlin, as the city plays host to the first ever Fluffer Awards. The ceremony, which organisers hope will become an annual event, celebrates the unsung heroes of the porn industry. The event, although a serious attempt to promote the industry and fluffing as a profession, makes sure humour is at the heart of the proceedings. Compared by Henning Wenn, self-proclaimed German ambassador of comedy to Great Britain, and ex-porn star Eva Horn, some of the top awards include Best Pole Smoker, Best Penis Makeup, and Best Vaginal Presentation. The event takes place in the prestigious Radisson Blue Hotel and will attract over 600 sex industry professionals. So, is it going to be the moral panic over drunken tampons? Dog drives a bus? Or the Fluffer Awards? And I think it's Trev's turn to go first.
Right. Okay. Now, the Fluffer Awards, as ridiculous as it sounds, I'm pretty sure that's the kind of thing that somebody, a porn producer, would arrange just to get in the papers, to make people look up his stuff. So I can totally believe that that appeared in the news. And that blokes anally taking vodka sodden tampons. See, that just got me thinking about somebody going to an AA meeting and saying, "Yeah, hi, my name's Dave, I'm an alcoholic, and I had some alcohol this week." "Oh no, Dave, what happened?" "I really don't want to tell you." "Come on, you can tell us." "I really, really can't." You don't want to fall off the wagon and onto something like that. That's a terrible, terrible thing to happen. But I believe that happened. Certainly students would give it a go. So, I think that the dog driving a bus is the one that you made up. And I think the clues are that it happened in a place called Darwin.
Okay.
And that the guy involved is called Newton. You just throw in scientist names at it.
Right, okay.
A dog evolving into a bus driver. Or would that be a bus driver evolving into a dog? No, I'm not going to have a go at bus drivers. If it wasn't for bus drivers, I wouldn't be here today.
Okay.
But that's the one I think you made up, yeah.
Fair enough. Mm. Stephen.
I'm actually inclined to go along with Trev, and I kind of also spotted the use of scientist Trev as well. That was kind of my take on it. I kind of wanted to go for the first one because of the use of the term jamrag in the build up, which is a marvelous.
But remember, I do rewrite.
Marvelous turn of phrase, Jonathan.
Was I riding the cotton donkey?
Yeah,
that was great.
But therein lies my problem. You see, with it, is that this is in America, yeah.
Yeah.
There's no way American boys are putting things up their bum because that's gay, man. It's gay.
It's faggy. It's
fags. Fags need fags put things up their bums. And we all know that fags don't drink, so it couldn't possibly be. Couldn't possibly be that, because American culture just doesn't lend itself to it.
And you don't buy the Fluffer Awards, then?
No, the Fluffer Awards I totally buy. I absolutely, totally, 100%.
You want to go, don't you?
Yeah, I want to go. I want to be there. Yeah.
In fact, as soon as this is over, you're going to go and book your tickets.
I'm booking my tickets. That's it. I'm there. I'm going to go with Trev, and I'm going to say that I think it is the... No, I'm not going with Trev. It's the Americans. There's no way American boys are putting things up their bums.
Okay. So is that your final answer now?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Right, so you're both locked in. Trev's going for the dog driving a bus, and you're going for the the tampons. So let's go with, we'll do them in order then or something. We'll go with the first one first. The moral panic in the US about vodka-drenched tampons is a true story.
No way.
And they quoted that men, that boys had been using them as well, putting them up their butt.
Shocking. That's, that, boys of America, that's gay. That's fag behaviour. You make me sick, fags. Obviously, that's irony to anybody who's listening.
Yeah. The second story about a dog driving a bus. I didn't even click on Darwin and Newton. That's a true story as well, which meant I made up the fluffer story, guys. I really hate to say.
Damn it, John!
Fooled you. Yet
I had
again.
My flights booked and everything.
Good grief.
Yeah, no, I didn't even pick up on the Newton and Darwin thing. That's you spotted it, and I didn't.
I mean, I know there was obviously a town in Northern Australia called Darwin. I know that.
Yeah, that is
famous
true.
Famous for jumping crocodiles.
And some people have a surname Newton, so you know, statistically, it's possible.
It's possible, yeah, absolutely.
But unfortunately, I made up the fluffer thing, and even though I managed to get in best pole smoker, best penis makeup, and best vaginal presentation.
But those like it's porn.
Should
those,
I tell you
those
what,
are
I,
awards
I,
you could genuinely believe exist. Yeah.
If we have a listener who is a porn producer, that's happening.
Yeah,
that's going to happen in about a month.
The funny thing is, right? I knew, okay. I believed as you that in the porn industry anything's possible, and I actually googled fluffer awards, and it doesn't exist. So
you found a niche. I think you want to go to the Ransom Blue in them. In Berlin and set it up, make it so.
Yeah, in fact, if there is anybody listening who is a porn producer, if you can get that done in time so that it turns out to actually be true, we get our points.
Yeah.
I admit that's not much of a motivation for you.
And I've actually put a date in. It's got to be the second week of December, according to the story.
So come on,
get fluffing, guys, come on.
Get fluffing. Steve needs fluffing. Great, so more points tomorrow this week. I'm just shit hot at this. I really am.
You're about 2 or 3 points ahead of us.
Yeah, I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it. So, it's now time for Trev's Catholic story.
Hooray. Okay, get ready
and there
for
was
this.
Much rejoicing.
I was hoping he would be more excited about it than me. I was looking forward to it. Go on, Trev.
More than 2,000 years after his birth, Christ the King was honored in a historic way with a massive, electronic, holy shout-out via texts, emails, and tweets sent simultaneously from cell phones on November 19th by 23,000 participants at the National Catholic Youth Conference and National Catholic Collegiate Conference. Bishop Christopher J. Coyne, Apostolic Administrator to the Archdiocese of Indianapolis, and host of the conference, asked the teenagers, collegians, and all attending the closing mass to text, email, or tweet the words "Called to Glory," the conference theme, to family members and friends throughout the U.S. at the conclusion of the vibrant liturgy. Murmurs began to spread through the quiet football stadium when Bishop Coyne surprised the conference participants by asking them to turn on their cell phones at the end of mass. For over 2 hours now, we have turned this space into a holy place where holy people have listened to holy words and done holy things and received holy gifts, Bishop Coyne said. I want you all to dig out your cell phones and turn them on because we're going to do a holy shout-out. I don't think this has ever been done with a crowd like this and maybe the first time at a big Catholic gathering. I want you to type in "Called to Glory." And after he announced the holy shout-out, the teenagers, collegians, and others in attendance quickly typed in the words, then awaited his cue to press the send button on their cell phones. And then they did. And that was it. I don't really know what they were expecting.
Did it trend on Twitter, at least? That's what I'd be hoping for. Maybe. A bit of publicity.
I don't think so. No.
It got drowned out by the usual talk of knobs and...
Well, it may have, but I doubt that the person who wrote the article really would know to look.
Oh,
I do things move so fast on Twitter.
But on Twitter, it is possible to track the last 30 days of what was popular at any given hour using the API. I know this as a programmer. So they could have found out if it was trending. How popular it was. But they didn't. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah. It's just that it seemed like them trying to make the Catholic Church connect with new technology and the way that people text and tweet each other all the time.
Yeah. Only which is quite just... interesting. Interesting in so much that, I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, the Catholic Church isn't completely backwards. They at least accept things like evolution and, you know, that the Earth goes around the sun. But at the same time, they haven't been very forwards lately, have they? They've been a bit more holding us back, especially in Africa. So yeah, it was quite. But then again, not being funny, the Pope's got a Twitter. He's got a Twitter page and he's got a YouTube. He's got everything.
But do you think he's actually used them at all?
Not him personally. I'm not that naive. I'm sure he's got people to do them for him. But you know, they have embraced technology before. You know, in the shape of that. But maybe next year they will. You know, instead of saying whip out your phones, it'll be, you know, whip out your cocks but make sure you put a condom on them first. That would be surprising.
There's that weird halfway house thing that he said about if you're very at risk of getting AIDS and that's the reason you're going to use a condom, then I suppose I can let you get away with it. So basically, nobody who's married has any excuse for using a condom.
Well, unless their partner has AIDS.
Yeah, or if you...
But according to the Pope, married people don't have AIDS. Basically, that's their outlook on life. But
I just thought a holy shout-out was... it was kind of sweet, you know? Bless. But what's the point? You're just sending it to people you already know. You've confused a lot of your friends by sending them a message that just says, called to glory. Maybe they thought that's the text that gets automatically sent out when people are raptured. Holy shit, Dave's been called to glory. He's got a better phone than me. I want to go get it.
He can tweet from the afterlife. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Right, who wants to do a story? Because I got a big story.
Come on then, let's hit us with your big story, John.
Right, now I've warned Stephen. I've warned Stephen about this story that we must be careful about what we say, and I will now give you that warning, Trevor. Okay.
Oh.
Because both you and I have personal experience of this that we can't talk about. But we need to talk about this story in the wider sense of it, okay? And this comes from a very popular website, the Quackometer, which is obviously a skeptic's website. And it's talking about how a certain Dr. Baczynski, who owns a clinic in Texas, has threatened him with libel. So the person who runs this website is Andy Lewis, who's talked about Baczynski on his website and talked about how he has been convicted in a court of fraud previously. And he runs a research center where he charges people extortionate amounts of money to take part in a trial of his drugs to cure cancer. And this drug has not been independently confirmed as a cure for any cancer. So it would appear that he seems to be just taking lots of money off very desperate people, and there appears to be no efficacy. How does that make you feel, Trev?
It makes me feel incredibly cross because of the decades that it's a matter of public record that this man's research is ongoing, but it's been ongoing for decades and has yet to reach a conclusion. But you can't from that say to everybody, I'm a scientist, I'm following scientific procedure, because there can be no peer review until you publish.
Right. And he hasn't.
That is the case, isn't it?
That's the usual way. Is you publish your findings, and you know, people get to look at your method, and they say, "Ah, this is a good method."
And they can
method.
Try and replicate them.
Yeah.
And they see if it's successful.
But that
I
hasn't
can't
happened.
Understand what's making it take this long, unless he's just enjoying all the money. That's one explanation. I'm not saying that's the reason, you know.
It sounds
very dodgy. Yeah.
Steve, what are you thinking about, you know, Have you got anything to add, or are you just going to agree with Trevor?
No, I agree with Trevor. I just, for me, there's a real tragedy in this that, particularly with this particular treatment, there's been a couple of stories this week of, really desperate people looking to raise funds, getting celebrities and things involved.
Peter Kay,
yeah.
He's doing two gigs.
To try and raise some funds to help these people out. Now, I don't criticise the people doing it. I think it's great that they have that public spirit, that they will put this show on and do this work for these people. My problem is that, sadly, the money is going to a treatment which has no proof that it actually works. And whilst hope is a wonderful thing, a false hope is a terrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
A miracle cure, which I guess is what these people are looking for, which probably doesn't actually exist, because there's nothing out there to say that it does exist other than, I guess, hearsay, really, because there's been no real proof about it. Then I think it's an absolute tragedy that these people get their hopes up and literally spend the last few months, weeks, days of their lives
flying around the world, chasing,
relying on a treatment which more than likely won't cure them. And I think that's really tragic, they could be using that money and that time. They could be using the money to research bona fide.
Well, they could just go to fucking Disneyland and have some fun.
They could use the money to research proper cancer cures.
Real
cancer cures. They could do that. They could do that. Or they could.
I would like nothing more for this guy's actual treatment to be proved right.
Absolutely, Trev. I'd love for it to work. But, if he can prove that it does work, and absolutely hats off to him, fair play.
We'll all apologise for doubting.
Yeah, it goes without saying. But, at the moment, he's not in a position to prove that. And I would rather that these vulnerable people spent their money on enjoying the last few days, weeks of their lives together than chasing a dream halfway around the world.
Let me ask Trev a question. And Steve mentioned it, the celebrity endorsement, Peter Kay being the example there.
Yeah. Is this the same one that Rufus Hound was...
I think that was a separate case, but it may have been Baczynski, but it might have been a different person,
right?
Or victim, as I would call them. But as the celebrity endorsement, now Peter Kay announced on, I believe it was Alan Carr's Chatty Man the other night, that he was doing this gig.
It was followed up in The Guardian, or The Observer next.
And it was known beforehand that he was going to announce it. So it's been going on for a while now. But since it was initially announced, there had been tweets direct to him, referring him to the fact that this treatment that he was basically funding with his work, his good work, was fraudulent, at worst, and there was no proof behind it at best. So what are your thoughts, Trev, on... Well, what do you think would be his responsibility as a celebrity who was now doing this? I mean, what would you do if you were him?
Well, a brief Peter Kay impression. Skeptical thinking? What's that? Sorry, that's half the act. I'm not going to have a go at anybody for not thinking critically about something. That's not your job if you're an entertainer of any description. If something appears to be, if something looks like a charitable cause and quacks like a charitable cause, then it's probably a charitable cause. But it turns out the recipient might not be worth it.
That's not the recipient.
And
the
we wish it was.
Yeah, that's a bit of a dodge from you there, Trev. I expected something a bit stronger.
Okay, sorry.
Go on, no, carry on.
What you should do, now that he's got all the information, what I believe you should do, is say that instead of what I was going to do, I'm going to donate all of the funds to UK cancer charities, research charities. And this guy can apply to maybe an international one, and this guy can apply to them for a research grant. think, and that way it might still get to the guy if he's legitimate.
Do you know, I think the really sad thing about this, though, actually, in terms of this story, is that Peter Kay has agreed to do this for this particular child who's having this treatment. So I guess from his point of view, he's kind of honour bound to do that. Because, as we said, this treatment quite probably could be fake. But at this moment in time, that child's family believe in that treatment. And he has said he will do this gig so that this child can have this treatment. And, you know, I guess he probably sees it himself as being honour bound to do it.
Well, yeah, but that's like saying, regardless, you know,
because at the end of the day, yes, he could do it and say, I'll give my money to the cancer charities, but that's not giving the money to the family that he's agreed to do. So he could almost be seen as going back on his word to that family.
But that's like saying, all right, so somebody said to you, you know, can you do this for me? And you went, yeah, yeah, of course I will. Because, you know, but then you realise later that what you were going to do was potentially harmful. What is that still honourable?
Yeah, you know, I think you have to have a good, long, hard think about it. And
because I'm with Treb, I think if Treb sincerely believes what he said,
I would hope that Peter Kay has had a good, long, hard think about it. But like I said, he may feel he's honour bound, duty bound, to provide as he had agreed for this child. Because you know he may not believe in it, but that family still do. And
but
you know,
what
he,
would you say is the ethical thing to do?
The ethical thing to do, absolutely, without a doubt, would be to say, there's no proof behind this treatment. I'll give my money to a bona fide cancer charity. I'll make money available for research or whatever, as Trev said, and do that. But
So is Peter Kay doing the unethical thing, then? If
Well, yeah, by that reason, of course he is. But then, you know... there's no, you know, trap or argument in that.
Sorry, Trevor's giggling.
That's very tricky. Yeah, unethical. But yes, sticking to a promise he made to
exactly.
A child
that, I think that's what it boils down to. Is that, you know, we've spoken already about the false hope, which can be given.
Which I'm glad you said is not hope.
Yeah,
because I don't think
by false treatment. No. Then by the same thing, Peter Kay saying, yeah, I'll raise the money for you so you can go, is also a false hope for those, that family, if he doesn't come up with the goods.
Yeah.
So, it's a difficult decision for him to make.
Did you really think that, Trev? Do you really think that he should have the balls to just say, actually, I've thought about this and looking on the basis of the evidence, I'm not gonna, you know, give you this money?
I don't know if he should have the balls. It's what I would do.
Right, yeah, but...
be as apologetic as you can imagine to the kid. You know,
but you'd have the
adding
balls
to his
to...
hopes, because... it's a similar kind of thing with... you know, like that prayer rally for rain, and everybody getting wrapped up and believing it's going to happen. For God's sake, don't add to people's delusions in these things. By promising to do that, he's also lending some credibility to it. By saying, I'm going to raise all this money and the Absolutely. Money's going to go to this treatment, he's making it seem that more credible to other desperate people in the country.
Well, it's giving it a platform as well, isn't it? Because other people will read that story and go, oh yeah, my child could do with that treatment, I could do with that treatment, my son, my daughter, my parent could do with that treatment, I'll try and get funding to...
Now,
to do that,
I find it pretty hard to believe that Peter Kay isn't aware of the big backlash over this now, about what he's doing. Very public, and a lot of big-name people have said to him now, have made him aware of the fact that it's a load of bollocks. So, if he does go ahead with this thing, does it alter your opinion of him in any way, Stephen?
No, not at all. Because, like I said, I think he's got a very difficult decision, because... like, you know, if he does go and say, right, I'm not going to give this money to you anymore because of these things being brought to my attention, then, like I said, he's as guilty of giving false hope to that family as the...
Well, no, because he's putting an end to the false hope, isn't he, surely?
The false hope being that they were all set to go and have this treatment, which they believe is going to change their life. and he said he pulled the rug from underneath them after promising. That's what I mean. It's not the false hope of the treatment, it's the false hope of the promise
of
having the treatment.
Yeah, no, sorry, because I think you're doing here you've kind of done on a few things where it's like almost like blaming the victim. It's not his fault that the treatment's bogus.
No, that's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is if he... It's an emotive subject, isn't it, yeah? You've got a little girl who is dying of cancer.
I get that.
Who is going to die of cancer. He has told their family, I will give you the money to do it.
Well, no, he didn't say that.
He said, I will raise a benefit gig, which is essentially the same thing. He's splitting hairs. I will put a gig on and I'll give you the money to fund this trip for you. And then suddenly he's pulling that rug away from underneath them. So they're all set. They all believe.
But I'm asking you, is he responsible?
So which do you think is right? Yeah.
Is he responsible for them having, for breaking their dream?
No, because I think, I just think it's a really difficult situation. And I think if he is now aware and has looked into the research of it, then I think he needs to go to that family with a caveat. And still, if they still want the money then, well, let them have it because he's made that commitment to them.
This is a good conversation. I like it. Trev, go on. This is good.
Yeah, it's so tricky. The guy was... lots of people like to have a go at Peter Kay because he's so successful. But I love plenty of stuff that he's done. Some of his early stand-up and Phoenix Nights, bless him. And doing this, all the charity stuff he's done, he's become one of those charity lovies. So let's all have a go at him for that. But you can't. This is good. He did it for a good reason. And even if he carries on and gives them the money to send them, he's only doing it with the best intentions. I think that would be the wrong thing to do for the message that it sends to other people. But he hasn't involved himself in other people's lives. He's only involved himself in this family.
Okay,
yeah,
hang on.
Thank you, Trev, because you are succinctly summing up what I'm trying to say.
No, he's just dodged the question. I gave you a question, and you honestly answered it.
I told you what I would do. I'm not saying I won't judge him either way that he does it.
All right, okay, so you wouldn't judge him either way. But what I'm saying is, but would you hold him, if he did it, Steve seems to think that he's going to be in some way responsible for ending the dream. Would you say he's responsible for ending the dream?
Well, given that he has involved himself in that family's lives now, he's going to feel responsible. and I don't
Steve
know.
Can see my face at this moment. not being funny, you use the term weasel words a lot more than me, Trev, so come on.
I do.
You're on the hot spot now.
I think that the right thing to do...
No.
And I'm not going to judge him whatever he does, all right?
Oh, dude. You sound like you're fresh on Newsnight.
I've been listening to a bunch of Christian apologetics all week and they've been driving me bloody crazy.
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry about that. Oh, dear. Okay. So Trevor's inconclusive, not willing to commit. Stephen,
I told you what I would do.
He didn't want to answer the difficult question. I would say he had the best intentions. I agree with that. I think that as soon as he finds out the truth, however, we agreed that the ethical thing to do would not be to support it, but to perhaps do something better with the money. However, and when it came to the responsibility, if he did decide to not give them the money and say, look, I'm sorry, but I've found out, now that this information's come to light, it wouldn't be right, because we've already said it's not ethical, so therefore the responsibility would remain with the charlatans, I'm afraid. Otherwise, we'd start saying things like blaming the victims of people, who get shot for, saying something nasty about Mohammed and stuff like that.
But when you talk about responsibility like that, yeah, of course it's the...
the ultimate responsibility, basically. Yeah.
He still has responsibility from having involved himself in the situation. But none of us are going to judge him for that.
I can understand that I'm a human being and I'm not going to think he's a twat. But what I'm saying is that if he felt any remorse or he felt guilty, I'd be the person saying to him that actually it's not your fault. You got suckered in just like the family's been suckered in, and So I don't think he's responsible in any meaningful way.
No, and absolutely, I totally, you know, agree with that. Mm. When I say he's responsible for ending their dream, what I mean is from the point with Trevor saying is that he has got involved with that family, and whether it's right or wrong, they believe in that treatment. And, you know, whether we think that's right or wrong, you know, is kind of, in terms of their little world, irrelevant, because they believe that that treatment is the right thing for them. And if he then says, well, no, I'm not going to give it to you.
Steve, why did you need to all of a sudden go down some kind of, like, relativism thing?
Well,
we were having
know.
A really intellectual discussion, and then you went all wimpy in Church of England
no,
on us,
dude.
No, I'm
not being wimpy in Church of England. I'm sticking by what I said.
No, no, you were doing really, really well, and then you were like going, well, in their world, it's the right decision.
No, no,
I'm patronising fuck.
I'm still sticking by what I said.
No, no, you said the right thing.
All I'm saying is that I want to be clear, because you were talking about, you know, him not having responsibility is ultimately with the treatment, the, you know, the snake oil sales.
But what I'm saying is, I would.
Then yes, absolutely, I agree with that, and fundamentally agree that the responsibility and the burden of proof on the efficacy of their treatment is on the Baczynski Clinic.
Right. But what I'm saying is, in this whole conversation, not just our conversation, but with the conversation, the broader conversation on things like forums, where that there was one, I think it was in the Northern Ireland Echo, where a young man went to Baczynski and all that. There was a lot of apologetics from friends and family of his.
Yeah.
And what I wanted to say was nobody... Well, there were some people, but they were kicked down. They were lambasted for basically saying it's wrong. The family are wrong.
Because they want to hold on to that false hope, don't they? Because they've got... They're clutching at straws, aren't they? You know, and you can't blame them for
it. No, I understand them, but it doesn't change the fact that they're wrong.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I agree with that.
Cool. Awesome. That's taken up a lot of time. So I will lay down the rest of the podcast. Trev, you still there? I'm sorry.
Hello.
I just remembered his blood sugar and everything. You're right.
Yeah, I'm good.
Can I make one more comment thing then? Because... obviously, it's going to happen before next podcast, which is next week's Day of Action on pensions.
Right, this is a big story.
Still says, I only think I just want to mention it. I suppose we can probably talk about it in more detail next week, but I guess it's going to happen before our next podcast, so it may be worthwhile. And it may be worthwhile just bringing it up now and having a quick thought on it. Especially because I've got a cartoon in front of me from the Guardian.
They do cartoons in the Guardian.
They do, yeah. Which is quite interesting. You've got kind of got a court jester whose head has been replaced with a bum. And the comment where it goes, taking one day off work is the height of irresponsibility, and then throwing a whole generation out of work on the other hand, ... So it's just quite interesting really, because I know from past conversations we've had, John, that, you know, you think public sector workers don't really have anything to complain about because they're getting a great pension anyway.
Well, hang on a second. I think you're kind of running a bit too far with what I said.
Yeah, you were saying that for them to be complaining specifically about the pension thing is a bit ridiculous. If what they should be complaining about is the fact that so many of their compatriots are being fired.
And the system in general is
being screwed. I think that's why people are going to be supporting public workers striking.
Right,
because
so
of the general,
they're going to be supporting
treatment
them
by the government.
Yeah.
Which I agree with.
Yeah.
Pensions, as I said, the evidence is they have it cushier than the private sector.
Yeah.
There's no denying that. And so how can I have sympathy for someone who has it better than me in that one particular area? If you're going to strike over redundancies, they're probably going to have my sympathy.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Well, because all of this stuff is not trying to cut the deficit. This is Tory policy decisions.
Exactly.
And this is what it comes down to for me then as well, is that, again, we're coming back almost full circle. We started off with the media again, and this time the government is using the media, as it has done, including the last Labour government, to actually take away power from the workers, but basically telling us that striking is a bad thing.
Mm.
you know, we've got George Osborne, I think it was, or was it Danny Alexander, wasn't it, today, coming out saying, oh yeah, it's going to cost $500 million this day of action. Where do they get those figures from? Where do they base it on?
Yeah.
You know.
It's very interesting.
What are these figures coming out of? That's absolute nonsense, you know? And they're spouting these stories out so that, again, you know, the public, who can be quite susceptible to the media and what the media is telling them, are sucking this up, and suddenly the people who are trying to fight for their futures, and also for the future generations to some extent as well, are suddenly becoming vilified and villains. And it kind of struck me as quite interesting, because I don't know if you saw last week's episode of Garrow's Law.
I didn't, unfortunately.
Again, that was, you know, that's set in pre-union times, and they were talking about the strikes against the woolen merchants because of the conditions and the pay and, you know, all these sort of things. Just men who were willing to die for the right of setting up a union, and, you know, for the rights to strike. And now we just seem to get an awful lot of ambivalence towards unions and, you know, towards workers' rights, which I find absolutely incredible. You know, I listen to some of my colleagues at work who are, well, what have a union ever done for us? In very much that kind of Monty Python sketch. You know, what,
yeah,
what
the Roman Empire, yeah, of course.
You know, so yeah, apart from holidays, maternity pay, paternity pay, etc., 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 what the unions ever done for us?
Working when you were 10 years old.
Precisely. So, but it's a myth which is constantly getting propagated by the media, but also by senior politicians such as Osborne, such as Cameron, and to some extent, most disappointingly, even Ed Miliband.
It was, and just, yeah, before you continue, it's very interesting just to think about the last Labour government and how basically every time there was union rearing its head saying we're not happy with this, they basically took the same line as any Tory government and said, look, you're ruining the economy if you do this.
Yeah.
They abandoned the unions, and that was one of the major criticisms levelled against the Labour Party during the last election. And as you said, you know, against Ed Miliband.
See, it absolutely amazes me now to see Ed Miliband coming out and saying, no, you shouldn't be striking, you shouldn't be doing this. What other option do these people have? Because the government isn't listening to them.
Mm. And it's one day as well.
Yeah, precisely.
Which makes me kind of think, really? So he's probably more concerned, like most of the squeezed middle, as David Cameron would say him, that would say, who's going to look after my children for the day?
Absolutely.
Which makes you think, hang on a second, it's daycare, not school.
Yeah.
So, which to me just shows the attitude towards what schools are. It's more about someone who takes your kids off you than is actually doing you a favour.
Yeah.
Which,
educating your child.
Completely mind-blowing for me, but it seems the mass populace to be just a case of, oh, poor me,
you,
what am I going to do? Well, that's, you
You'll
know,
see.
Obviously I would find
just
it frustrating.
Take the kid off my hands.
Obviously I would find it frustrating that I would have to take unexpectedly, however.
But let's be honest, this isn't unexpected. This has been planned for months.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you can't find alternative care or make arrangements for a day which has been planned for absolute months, well, you know,
you're an idiot.
You're an idiot. Yeah, exactly.
What I'm most interested about is to find out what the next bit of gripper telly is that you guys are fascinated by. John's really loving Poirot. You love Garrow's Law.
No, I don't. I know it's the first episode of Garrow's Law I've seen. Actually, so it just happened to be on telly.
Yeah.
I was watching it with my dad. I've never ever seen it before,
okay.
And I just thought it was really interesting because you've got this situation where you've got these two union men, you know, facing the gallows for being union men.
Hang on, did they just hang people for being union men back then?
But they were being hung for inciting as well.
Was this set in 1982?
Yeah, quite possibly. I'm sure Thatcher was in the background, you know, being blasted with a microphone. The lady is not
Steve, paternal. Steve, he's just gently ribbing you. It was a go at me because I admitted that I watched two episodes of Poirot.
Yes, I know, and you're going to buy the box set as well.
No, I didn't say I was going to buy it. I said I coveted it.
And then sit in your big slipper with a cup of milky tea and fall asleep.
To the sounds of murder on the Orient Express.
Right, thanks.
Okay, we better wrap up.
Yeah. So, anyone got any announcements before we go?
Just to, given that we won't be doing anything for 2 weeks, I've got a gig on the 6th.
What a twat.
Good evening. What?
You're probably expecting me to curl in, yeah? To come and see you.
Maybe. If you fancy.
Well, I'm going to go see the other Trevor Williams that night, the funny one.
Yeah.
Not Trevor J. Williams, but the Trevor Williams.
To be honest, part of me wants to go and watch him die on stage. But
it could happen.
But yeah, go and see Trev. He is actually quite funny. I know you wouldn't think it from the podcast, but he is actually quite funny.
He has his moments.
Based on none of this evidence.
Yeah. And we just want to announce our rugby thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You know, we've got some awesome coverage of the Six Nations coming up.
Alternative commentary. But there'll be more details about that in the next podcast because I haven't written anything. So, yeah. Okay, great.
And just in terms of the podcast, I'm not going to be here week after next because I'm going to be sampling the Christmas markets in Germany.
See, this Nazi bin thing is becoming a prophecy now. Great.
You research how Nazi Germany started. It was bins and it was irregular podcasting.
Oh, no, the Jews, mask and pussy. Okay, let's end it. Thanks very much for listening, people.
We just managed to squeeze one dreadful, appalling thing to
say. Yes, I got it in at the end there. So we will next week we will be here.
Yes.
Good night.
Yeah. Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.